Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict calls for profound changes in the global economic system in order to fight world hunger and save the environment. A Vatican cardinal joins Britain's religious leaders in supporting a new financial scheme to fund a mass immunisation programme. And a historic meeting takes place this week between Catholic bishops in England and Wales and leaders of the Church of England. Welcome to the programme. Pope Benedict on Sunday launched an urgent appeal to governments and individuals to do more to reduce world hunger and preserve our environment. Speaking before reciting the Angelus prayer in St. Peter's Square, the Pope referred to the recent annual report from the Rome-based Food and Agriculture Organization, which confirmed that more than 800 million people around the world are still facing starvation. Facts, he said, which confirm what missionaries and church personnel already know from their direct experiences of working with communities in the poorest countries. Echoing the words of his predecessors, the Pope called for changes in the global economic system, which allots the majority of the Earth's resources to a small minority of the population. But he also called on each person and each family to adopt lifestyle changes in order to safeguard creation and promote economic justice for all. My colleague Catherine Smybert takes a closer look.
Pope Benedict XVI marked Italy's liturgical feast of Thanksgiving by remembering the tragedy of hunger that, he said, remains very serious in our world today.
Il dramma della fame.
The theme of the Sunday feast is the Earth, a gift for the entire human family. Citing a recent United Nations report that found there had been no reduction in the number of hungry people since 1990, the Holy Father condemned structural problems in the global economy that diverted riches to a minority of the world's population. He said that the global economic system must be radically altered if the world is to start reducing the number of people who live in hunger.
Che cioè oltre 800 milioni di persone vivono in stato di sottoalimentazione.
The Pope echoed the opinions of his predecessors, Paul VI and John Paul II, who often spoke against the imbalanced distribution of goods and the ill-considered use of natural resources, and who on several occasions called for a new world order which would give priority to the needs of the poor and hungry. To make a large impact, said Pope Benedict, it's necessary to convert the model of global development, something which is not only required by the scandal of hunger, but also by environmental and energy emergencies.
Certamente occorre eliminare le cause strutturali legate al sistema di governo dell'economia mondiale.
The Pope went on to note how Jesus taught his disciples to pray and ask the Heavenly Father not for my, but for our daily bread, wanting everyone to feel co-responsibility for one another so no one would lack what is necessary to live.
Dovremmo abituarci a benedire il Creatore per ogni cosa.
So here, as well as calling for changes at a global level, the Holy Father pointed out how individuals also need to ensure their own lifestyles do not add to the problems of hunger and the environmental damage of our world. Every person and every family, he said, must do something to alleviate hunger in our world, adopting a lifestyle and consumption that are compatible with safeguarding creation and with criteria of justice towards those who cultivate the land in every country.
In ogni paese.
Pope Benedict connected his teachings on generosity to this Sunday's Gospel.
In today's Gospel we hear of a poor widow who gave to the Lord all she had without keeping anything for herself. Her generosity is an inspiration to all of us to give ourselves totally to Christ.
The Holy Father ended his Angelus reflections by exhorting all to integrate worship and culture by giving thanks to God through solidarity.
Upon all of you and upon your families and loved ones at home, I invoke God's abundant blessings.
And my thanks there to Catherine Smybert for that report on Pope Benedict's Sunday Angelus address. One very practical way of helping the world's poorest people was taken last week with the inauguration at a ceremony in London of a financial scheme to raise funds for a mass immunisation programme for children in the developing world. The International Finance Facility for Immunisation will deliver $4 billion over the next 10 years to be spent on the immunisation of up to 500 million children in the world's poorest countries, immunising them against preventable diseases like polio, measles and diphtheria. As a practical sign of support for the scheme, Pope Benedict joined leaders of Britain's major faith groups in agreeing to buy the first six bonds for the immunisation programme. The Pope was represented at the inauguration ceremony in London by Cardinal Renato Raffaele Martino, head of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. Cardinal Martino said the Pope was pleased to help light the way for others who might also wish to join him in empowering those living in poverty and providing them with the opportunity to build a better future. Veteran rock stars and anti-poverty campaigners Bono and Bob Geldof have also bought bonds in this innovative scheme to save millions of lives in the developing world.
If one can do it, it should be done. And therefore, I'm delighted that we're able to cooperate as a church in this very great endeavour.
Among Britain's religious leaders attending the inauguration ceremony was Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, head of the Catholic Church in England and Wales, and a keen supporter of this scheme right from the start.
Yes, this particular project, which means that $4 billion will be spent on immunisation against preventable diseases like polio, measles, diphtheria, and will save 5 million lives in the years up to 2015, and a further 5 million afterwards. And it's particularly aimed, of course, for children. And the fact of this immunization takes place, then if there's no doubt, it'll be of enormous benefit to nations and peoples who are in great need. So I think the project has very much the support of the Holy See, which has been engaged in cooperation with our own Chancellor here, Chancellor Gordon Brown, who has been the driving force behind this. But the Holy See has had a very beneficial and helpful role in all this. And so I'm delighted that the Holy Father has also indicated his support in a very practical way by buying a bond as a token of the Church's support for this endeavour.
You also had many other faith leaders from there in Britain on hand for this launch, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I mean, it was very much an interfaith project because apart from Cardinal Martino, President of the Justice and Peace Council, there was also the Archbishop of Canterbury, leaders of other faith communities, Muslims and Sikhs and the Jewish community. So very much, I think, a coming together for a cause that everybody of any kind of belief in God, but also in being of benefit to others, particularly the poorest countries, were in accord with each other.
You also had your old friends Bob Geldof and Bono there. They're very much behind this initiative as well, aren't they? It's really a way of catching, I suppose, public attention, isn't it, for this important initiative?
Well, I think so. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the countries of the G8, the very rich countries, can do much more in terms of finance and help for the poorest nations. And I think our own Chancellor here is to be congratulated on this particular initiative, which is possible. If one can do it, it should be done. And therefore, I'm delighted that we're able to cooperate as a church in this very great endeavour. It was very interesting, actually, that on the very day, reading in the breviary of the readings of the day was about the council's document on the church and the world and the need for everyone to cooperate in justice and peace for the needy.
Deus Caritas Est, the encyclical, came out earlier this year, made it very clear that it's a Christian's responsibility to work for charity and work for the poor.
Another participant at the inauguration ceremony was Chris Bain, director of CAFOD, the London-based Catholic Agency for Overseas Development. He told my colleague Emma McCarthy how the idea for this immunisation funding project first came about.
The idea for selling bonds probably originated in the Treasury of Britain and was a sort of personal initiative of the Chancellor, Gordon Brown. I think he, like many of us, were frustrated that we weren't going to get the aid quick enough to make a real difference. And so he said, with his contacts in the city, can we find a way of front-loading some of this money that's needed now through a bond system, by using the money markets in a sort of an ethical bond way? And this idea was born in that way, and it became known as the International Finance Facility, and it was tried out on a number of people. The Vatican's involvement was there right from the beginning, really, because in February 2004, Cardinal Cormac, who got to know the Chancellor very, very well, suggested to the Justice and Peace Commission, how about a conference on financing development? And this took place and hosted by the Justice and Peace Commission. Gordon Brown came over, a few of us came over with him, and he basically presented the idea to this conference within the church, who were very, very receptive to it. So in some ways, we're seeing the fruits of that sort of work of the British Treasury, Cardinal Cormac, and the Justice and Peace Commission, and it came to fruit yesterday in this launch of the new IFF immunisation bond.
It's quite an innovative program in itself. What exactly are the sale of these bonds going to finance?
Well, it is innovative. In some ways, part of me as a development professional would say, why don't the governments give us the money now, you know, not spend it on other things? But that's not the real world. The real world is there are always hard decisions about governments and spending. So the bond idea was to say, can we borrow the money off the finance market at a low rate, which can then be used to spend on something which needs the money now? And certainly one area that needs the money now is immunization of children. It's estimated that something like 30,000 children die a day from preventable diseases. And something like this bond could actually immunize 500 million children over 10 years and actually save 500,000 lives every year through just an immunization program. And it's going to be implemented through an organization called Gavi, which is the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, which has got this global program of immunizing children on diseases like polio, measles, and diphtheria. So it can actually allow, you know, up to 500 million children over the next 10 years, lives to be saved. It's quite an important initiative.
Chris, to the average person sitting at home in their armchair watching the television and perhaps seeing an advertisement for some charity organization, perhaps one thought that would cross their mind is, surely isn't it easier for me just to give money directly to charity rather than go out and buy a bond? Why should people opt for this, for buying bonds, first of all? And secondly, if one did want to get their hands on one of these bonds, how and where would they do so?
I don't think this bond replaces all the wonderful charitable work that people should be doing and the support to organisations like the various Caritases around the world. I think it's an additional way in which institutions in particular or organizations in particular could give support to this particular project. Deus Caritas Est, the Pope's first encyclical, talked about charity and love being at the center of our faith. So I think it would be important for people still to support their charities because they do great work. But if they want to think about another way of buying a bond over a period of time, then that's an alternative way of doing things, not actually a replacement.
As you said there in your answer, this is really focused more towards the institutions, governments, banks, large corporations, to try and involve them perhaps more directly in charity. Yesterday at the launch of this programme, we saw really the most eclectic group of people buying the first bonds. You yourself were there. Would you like to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, I think it was a wonderfully, you know, sacramental event actually yesterday, because what you had is all the church leaders from Britain plus Cardinal Martino, head of the Justice and Peace Commission in the Holy See, representing Pope Benedict. You had huge numbers of business people it was right in the middle of the city of London, you know, the center of in many ways European finance. So it was incredibly symbolic, bringing together Cardinal Martino representing Pope Benedict, Archbishop of Canterbury, the chief rabbi, Jonathan Sacks, the leaders of the Muslim, Hindu, and Sikh communities of Britain, all together buying the first set of bonds. It was incredibly and very, very moving, and it shows how the faith community can get together and express their faith through this form of charity and through this form of work. And I thought it was incredibly powerful, and the whole event was wonderful.
Yesterday, they said they hoped that the first bond issue would raise up to $1 billion. Was that, to your best of your knowledge, Chris, was that sum raised?
It was raised twice over, apparently, according to the Chancellor, Chancellor Brown, that it had been more than subscribed already. So that's very, very positive that actually it's caught the imagination of investors to have these bonds. I do take your point earlier on, though, that in some ways this initiative cannot be seen as a replacement for international governments taking their responsibility to achieve the development goals. It cannot be seen as a replacement for that. So we'll still be putting the pressure on the G8 countries in Berlin next year, on the European Union, to actually make sure that aid, that finance for development, that trade justice are an important part of the future global society we're in, so that we can eradicate poverty, and not just talking about saving some children's lives, by saying even all children's lives. So for me, it's a first step of doing this, and we will still try to hold those world leaders to account to deliver their promises of last year.
Chris Spain there, director of CAFOD, Britain's Catholic Agency for Overseas Development. And earlier you heard Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, head of the Catholic Bishops' Conference in England and Wales. Staying in Britain, a historic meeting takes place this week between the Catholic bishops of England and Wales and bishops of the Church of England. The leaders of both denominations are gathering in the northern city of Leeds, where the Catholic bishops are holding their regular twice-yearly meeting to discuss issues of concern to dioceses around the country. Although ecumenical cooperation on social issues is commonplace at both grassroots and leadership level in many areas of Britain, this is the first time such a large number of bishops from both churches will be meeting and worshipping together, a clear sign of common witness to their shared values and beliefs.
It's seen as being quite a vivid and visual witness to what the two denominations hold together in common.
Jed Clapson is communications officer for the Jesuits in Great Britain. He told my colleague Susie Hodges he believes this week's meeting is extremely significant.
I think it's very significant. They're downplaying it in as much as there's no formal agenda, as far as we understand. The agenda is really going to be set by the bishops themselves. But it is the first time, as you say, that a meeting of all the bishops of the Church of England, the House of Bishops as it's known, and the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales have met together in what they're calling a very fraternal way. Their objectives, well, I think firstly just to meet together as a group, to see each other, to talk about the issues. There's a lot of feeling, I think, that while there are issues in common, there's also this big divide now, particularly over the question of women priests, women bishops, and the whole question that the Church of England is facing over homosexuality. And so it's seen as being quite a vivid and visual witness to what the two denominations hold together in common. And it is going to be indeed very visual on Tuesday evening, when all the bishops are going to be attending Vespers at the Cathedral in Leeds.
I gather they will be discussing practical ways to express what they call the fruits of the dialogue between Anglicans and Catholics. Can you give me some examples of this, do you think?
I think it's very hard. They're talking about basing it on shared prayer, dialogue, and a desire for further development of their common Christian witness. So I think it's very much going to be exploratory in terms of seeing where there is common ground between them, acknowledging that there are differences, but also bearing in mind that we are living in a culture and a society, in Britain certainly at the moment, where religion it has really raised its head in a quite phenomenal way. You know, the whole question of terrorism and the dialogue between Islam and Christianity, these are issues which, not so long ago we were talking about spirituality and religion dying, fading away. Suddenly they're back on the agenda, everyone's agenda, whether it's education and schools or whether it's the right to wear Christian symbols or Islamic symbols. So I think the bishops of both the Church of England and the Catholic Church are acknowledging that religion is playing an important part, and what can they do to make that Christian witness visible?
Well, it is quite visible because, I mean, we do see ecumenical cooperation at the grassroots level. I mean, it's
indeed
pretty well established, and, you know, many church members would pretty much take it for granted nowadays. But how can it sort of move further, go beyond what's already in place?
It's very difficult to say. I mean, our church leaders are very often seen together. I mean, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, often seen together on common issues. But to actually have all of the bishops, all of the Catholic bishops, all of the Anglican bishops there in a meeting and in a public service, I think is going to send out a very strong message that there is room for dialogue, there is room for exploration, and I think there is room for a stronger Christian witness.
But in practical terms, what is likely to come out of it?
A very good question. Who knows? Dialogue, certainly important, exploration, acknowledgement, and perhaps, you know, this may be the first of several, many future meetings between the House of Bishops and the Catholic Bishops. I think it's an exploration initially. Let's see where it leads to after that.
And the meeting comes, in fact, at the same time that the Catholic bishops of England and Wales are holding their twice yearly meeting, which is also in Leeds. But I gather that the agenda for that is pretty much under wraps.
Yes, I mean, was it planned or is it just a very happy coincidence? The point is that the bishops do regularly meet in November in Leeds, and so I think the fact that there was an invitation issued to the House of Bishops to join them for part of this meeting or the same week as this meeting was just a way that the bishops were all together already, and so it was an opportunity for them to issue an invitation to their Anglican brothers. In terms of the meeting, you say it's under wraps. I think very much it's a business meeting anyway. The agenda is something that is worked out by the various departments of the Bishops' Conference, and any resolution or any statement that they choose to make at the end of it is what they'll do on maybe Thursday or Friday of this week.
Now, talking of coincidence and timing, do you think it's a coincidence that this meeting between the Anglican and Catholic bishops is taking place only a matter of days almost between a forthcoming meeting between Pope Benedict and Dr. Rowan Williams, the Anglican primate?
Well, of course, some may talk of coincidence, others may talk of the intervention of the Holy Spirit. I think it's going to be significant in as much as it is just as we have the Church of England and the Catholic Church here in England and Wales talking and meeting together, so it's also significant that the head of the Roman Catholic Church and, as you say, the primate of the Church of England, Dr. Williams, should be meeting in Rome. I think it symbolises something that has been going on, thankfully, for 40-odd years, this dialogue that does take place, this acknowledgement that there are differences which are very hard to get over, some of them perhaps insurmountable, but there's also a lot of common ground. I mean, just thinking the statement that came out about 18 months ago on the Virgin Mary, and a lot of common ground there. Acknowledgement that there are hurts and there are wounds, but there's also a great deal of very warm and very genuine friendship between the two churches.
Changing the the subject somewhat. I gather that the question of refugees has been hitting the headlines in Britain, and that a joint report by Amnesty, Jesuit Refugee Services, and also the Catholic bishop who is in charge of refugee questions have issued a statement saying that government policy is leaving refugees homeless and destitute. Can you tell us a bit more about this?
Yes, the report was actually from Amnesty International and Refugee Action here in Britain, as you say. And the basic finding of the report in its simplest form is that the government is deliberately making asylum seekers destitute and homeless in order to force them to leave the UK. Now, this has obviously distressed, as you say, Bishop Patrick O'Donoghue of Lancaster, who is the bishop on the Bishops' Conference responsible for refugee matters, and he has backed the report and actually condemned the government. And as you say, Jesuit Refugee Service in the UK also has. They wrote a letter alongside various people from Church Action on Poverty and the Refugee Councils and Citizen Advice and so on to one of the national newspapers here in Britain, saying they're extremely concerned at this new evidence of refused asylum seekers driven into homelessness and dire poverty because of government policies. They call it a dreadful state of affairs, and they say it must not be ignored. So they are very much calling on the government to review their policies regarding refugees and asylum seekers so that they don't end up in this terrible situation of having nowhere to live, no money, no opportunity to work, no food, or any other of the basic human rights that are so vital.
But is it thought likely that the government might do a U-turn on that? Because I think in many quarters, a tough line against what they see as illegal immigration, it goes down quite well with quite a lot of the population.
It's a very moot point. I mean, we're not necessarily talking about illegal immigration. What we are talking about are genuine asylum seekers. And I think one of the areas that the Church in Britain and certainly the Jesuit Refugee Service is very strong on is working with these people, listening to their cases, many of them coming from situations of violence where there are under threat. We're not just talking about economic migrants now. We're talking about people who are genuinely scared of going back to their countries. And the system is very much geared towards finding a solution to the problem rather than addressing the rights that individuals have and the rights that we all have under the United Nations Convention. So I think there is a continuing dialogue between the government, which is good at listening, perhaps not quite so good at acting, but listening to those organisations like JRS, which are involved with refugees, and Bishop O'Donoghue certainly is very, very vocal, and I'm pleased to say listened to by people who are concerned about the refugee issue, if that's not too bland a statement. So, yes, it may not be a significant U-turn, but I do think government officials do tend to listen to these people who are working with the refugees on the ground.
And my thanks there to Jesuit Communications Officer Jed Clapson, who was talking to my colleague Susie Hodges. That's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. We'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow. And don't forget, you can always find us on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. Stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.